Imagine a pill that can improve your focus, your memory, your sleep. A catalyst to improve your brain chemistry. Dr. Bill's Cognition Plus is truly the smarter in an hour pill. A combination of amino acids, trace minerals, and B vitamins, Cognition Plus is made with specialized herbal extracts that will enhance and support brain function. Our customers say,
I feel more focused.
My memory's getting better.
I can work longer with more useful hours.
Power up your neurotransmitters that have been depleted, like dopamine and norepinephrine. Stimulate the release of others, like serotonin and oxytocin. Improve circulation and energy production. Protect your mind and your loved ones today. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Cognition Plus at 888-212-8871 or go online to NutriMedical.com. That's 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. And listen to the NutriMedical Report on the Genesis Radio Network with open lines every weekday. NutriMedical.com, bringing nutrition and medicine together.
To the NutriMedical Report, we're going to have regularly on the program Russ Winsheimer, patent attorney, and of course his website is strategicpatentlaw.com. His call number is 800-621-3654. We have patents now for rendered velvet DR. This is the first nutraceutical in human history that actually returns you to the fetal state. The previous attempts, which are rendered velvet in regular capsules, which get destroyed primarily by the stomach acid, pepsin, and digestive enzymes, such as enteritis, means you can't return all the biomolecules in an unaltered state to the terminal ileum where they're mycelized and delivered to the tissues. Stem cells basically like architects and engineers, but if the building blocks are all present, you can build a fancy hotel like Trump Tower. But, you know, the fact is people will start to become elderly as soon as they're born. You actually don't age until you're actually physically born and disconnected from your placenta. This reconnects you to a placenta-like set of biomolecules that literally regenerates your body. And I tell people, we have a young gentleman that's heading off to Costa Rica for a stem cell transplant, but he's got his Red Deer Velvet DR in hand. He needs to take other nutraceuticals to regenerate his myelin, like Sphingolin and Omega Supreme Pro, etc., which he needs to be diligent to take. And, of course, you need to detoxify people in order for them to be removed from pathogens, heavy metals, and nutrient deficiencies that they may have a genetic SNP for their bioconversion. So they want our nutraceuticals to jump the bioconversion SNP or polymorphism. I want to get right into some of your technology, Russ, because as a patent attorney, you're very unique in your capacity to actually convert ideas into patent law and then convert them into a business plan, and then into an asset. Tell us that process, because you've actually done a lot of work in this area, which I've used patent attorneys in the past over the past 30 years. Your process is quite unique, and the outcome should be a transformation. In fact, the primary property that's being stolen by China every year is roughly $300 billion in intellectual property, which is really the primary thing we're concerned about more in the future of things like artificial intelligence, quantum technology, and the idea of 3D printing of machine parts and tools and even building materials, so like nanotechnology. This is very important stuff, isn't it? So tell us, what's your process and how it differs in terms of the thoroughness, the technologies you apply, and the business planning to move an idea into an asset?
Okay, Dr. Bill. This is Russ Winsheimer, patent attorney. And I started at a very excellent patent firm in Boston. I had no law degree, no training whatsoever, and they took me in there and gave me excellent training. But what it lacked was an emphasis on the business aspects of patents. My mentor was a Yale graduate, engineering, went to Harvard Law School, and then went right into that excellent patent firm in Boston. And I was trained that way initially, but then my second mentor gave me a better perspective. Beyond the ivory tower, it was more business-oriented, more street smart. And right. that was that a patent is a business tool. It has to be informed by a business strategy. And it really needs to become a business asset, not just a legal tool.
Right.
So I realized that my background as an entrepreneur, I went to into the legal profession in my late 20s. I had entrepreneuring in my early 20s. So I realized that my background, understanding business, markets, sales, marketing, all came into play in the process of identifying what to protect. At right. the Ivory Tower Law Firm, they said, just claim very, very broadly. Use as broad as you can in terms of logic and mathematics and whatever that will allow. And I ended up writing more abstract type patents. But later I realized it has to be very focused just on the market that the client is competing in. And then the language becomes more concrete, more clear, and actually reduces the cost of prosecution so that patents can be gotten more efficiently for less time and money. So it's a win-win-win all the way across the board when you understand why you're protecting something.
It's also a teaching. In other words, you're like a professor of logic and invention. So as a professor of logic and invention, what are you going to do? Like, for example, I sent my patent on to two companies to propose to them that we could license their companies to, they already produce a ton of Red Deer Velvet in their old, and we call archaic capsules, to use my marketing patent technology and what you patented are literally concrete, you've boiled down to its core, so that they could then incorporate me, and I'd say, look, this is my technology, I license you to use it, it will give people that take the product a lot more benefit than just taking capsules that are going to be destroyed by your gut acid and stomach enzymes. And so in other words, who's the person you want to send the patent application to? It's a business person that's going to perceive a way to create a market, a product, to make a profit, and to help people with a better technology, whether it's, let's say, a new PDA system for artificial intelligence or new manufacturing technology or a new healthcare product. That, for example, maybe a product like I saw one recently that helps people to monitor their blood sugar. They have a little patch they put on the skin so you don't have to prick yourself every time. You just have to put the scanner over the top of the patch. So that was a clever idea that someone had. Well, what you do is you turn clever ideas into marketable products. That's what you do differently, right?
Yes, yes, that's absolutely true. Under patent law, we have an obligation to teach how to make and use an invention. And we certainly did that in your patent application. But I like to go way beyond that and use techniques I learned about advertising and sales and help people understand the benefits and the features of the invention. And that needs to come across from the title all the way through so that when people read it, they immediately start to appreciate the value of it. And so if it's a potential licensee, you may have their attention for a few seconds and it has to grab them right from the title, why this thing is important, what the benefits are, and then they want to read more, and then the more they read, the more motivated they are to start doing a deal.
Yeah, for example, I have two older patents I want to kind of refurbish with your help and, redevelop them, which means they have to, in a sense, repatent them. One is actually beyond the patent period, which is my Dynatens, which is the first morphogenetic field machine, and I've learned a lot since 1986 when I patented. The second is the pain disc technology. I discovered that in the skin is a gate called Langerhans gate. That's the primary gate for pain. When people are taking pain pills, they're working at a higher one of the seven gates that control pain. And giving narcotics to control the gate of the subthalamic nucleus of the temporal cortex is not the place to stop pain. The place to stop pain, the primary place, is actually in your skin, because without skin, you can't suffer pain. And even if you've got cancer in the glisten capsule of your liver or bone pain from a metastasis, or fracture, it actually has to project the neurological signal to your skin. So what I want to do is take my technology and I will, in a sense, revisit those. The one that we're working on now, we've started to, is what's called epigenetic frequency therapy. I won't get into any details, but what it does is this will transform how we look at the quantum biology of not only humans, but animals and all living things, and allow it to have lots of applications. But there's lots of people out there have ideas, and they need to contact you if they have an idea, whether they're a machinist, or a tool and die guy, or a pharmacological inventor going to make a better delivery system, whatever. they need to contact you because you can take their idea, boil it down to something that's going to become a marketable asset. So you convert ideas into assets. Tell us a little bit about that procedure, because it's quite different than the regular patent officers I've talked to. As you said before, a lot of them try to get a really broad patent, which is, you don't want to make it so broad that, you know, it lends itself to legal challenges where somebody can change just a little bit and boom, they're running away with your idea. You want it to specific to the market of what you think is the goal, the I call the gold nugget of the market, of why you want the patent, which is not only a teaching, but also you're trying to convert it into something that if you present to a businessman, they look, oh yeah, that's a good idea. In other words, it's like I call it the paperclip idea. It's an idea that needs a market, needs a product, will make a profit center, will help people, and will become a business. It becomes literally converted into money and help for people. Keep that idea. We'll be right back with Russ Weinzimmer, strategic patent law attorney, in just a moment at Strategic Patent Law. Zimmer, patent attorney again. The website is strategicpatentlaw.com. The phone number to call, 800-621-3654. I don't think people realize the future doesn't just happen. The future happens because wise people decide to invent it. Now, it turns out that Americans, because it's interesting, in fact, I was talking yesterday to Lowell Ponte, and he actually looked at genetic SNPs that are much more common. It doesn't matter what race you are. There's genetic SNPs are far more common in Americans than in other populations in the world. And those gene SNPs make you more likely to leave your home country, where most people wouldn't move more than 20 miles, come to America, and the gene SNP doesn't matter if you're black, white, Hispanic, yellow, whatever. It doesn't matter what you are. They're much more common, which means there's a gist of the genes and gene selection that actually creates people that are more innovative. So we call the genius of independence or entrepreneurship is actually genetic. Isn't that interesting? So you can find a genetic SNP patterns are more common in people. It's not just IQ, it's creativity. It's willing to ask questions, willing to get out of the box. Now, what that's the reason why cultures that are against that have actually suppressed it, like Chinese, have to steal technology because their culture is against the idea of innovation. That's why I call it the chopsticks culture. Now, what you're doing is the exact opposite. You're trying to take really good inventive Americans, and other people want to patent through your office that can be non-Americans, Canadians, Europeans, and you take their great ideas and you turn them into an asset that then can become a business, a small business that can be bought to become a medium business or a big business. For example, I'm taking my patent technology and say, hey, company, let's say they're selling 10,000 bottles a month of a specific Red Deer Velvet from a company in L.A. Well, whatever share of the market is going to be a hell of a lot bigger if they actually use my technology and they get, like, remarkably better results. We had about 12 years using Red Deer Velvet, and I've taken it literally every day. When I started taking this Red Deer Velvet DR, the results are mind-blowing. Now, I already take a bucket of supplements. I have a bag of them in my desk right now. You hear the crinkle sound of my supplement bag? I take a lot of really top-quality supplements. These are not average. These are not average even by medical standards. The regular ones that a lot of doctors, chiropractors, naturopaths take is pretty well garbage compared to the expensive, powerful, and unique nutraceuticals that I have in NutriMeds. But when we add that to the Red Deer Velvet DR, and now we have epigenetic frequency therapy like Lumen Photon, and soon we have the Sonic Life and the Microcurrent, et cetera, and the Red Deer and the EGFT antenna. This Red Deer Velvet is a good example of a good idea. It's like the paperclip idea that now is going to not only help us to project our video and our information to the medical professions, not just here but around the world, but also to change the direction of the human race and biology. Because the most serious thing in our population is the increased death rate and dementia rate and serious disease rate of people as they get in their middle years and older. Did you know that people under age 40 are four times more likely to get colon cancer than people over 40? Now, you'd think it would be the opposite, wouldn't you? But it's not. And It's because they're exposed to more toxins as they're younger people because of our toxic environment. Vaccines, toxic food, lifestyle, etc. Then when we look at populations, you think, well, people, as they get older, you think they're more likely to die once they reach a certain age. In fact, the actuarial statistics are the opposite. If you live to be as old, say, 106 to 109, the chances of you dying each year drops dramatically. And what I want to do with a series of technologies is see the emergence of what I call the welderly. That's older people that have all their clues, can continue to walk without a walker, can sleep well, regenerate bones, so if they do have a fall, they don't break their bones. We had a lady the other day, she thought she broke her hip. When she fell, she didn't. She's been taking a ton of her supplements. She didn't break her hip. Praise the Lord. So that means she's going to be out of rehab in a week. We're going to give her things to try to regenerate her hip, including Lumen Photon over her hip. We're going to bump up her supplements like Collagen Max and Bone Generator, et cetera, Micell D3, Myco D2, and Collagen Max. And we're going to regenerate her bone. We're going to probably get her a sonic life machine to get a sine wave current compression of her piezoelectric crystals. And, of course, she's going to be on Red Deer Velvet DRs, which means this lady, who, by the way, is an engineer in her 70s, and she's a brilliant lady. I talk to her all the time. This lady has got smarts. Imagine her, somebody like her living to be, say, 110 or 120, and deciding to go back into business or go back, for example, some men and women, when they're over 100, into sports. Imagine somebody who's retired from sports 40 and 50 years, regenerates enough, they can decide to go back in and become like a LeBron James 20 or 30 years from now. Isn't that cool? That's possible with technology that's going to be unveiled by not only me, but thousands of other doctors. And to be honest with you, we're all getting breakthroughs now that are going to move the dial. So the whole idea of getting disease or aging, even if you had an amputation, is going to end, believe it or not. In the next 5 to 20 years, we are going to conquer aging and most diseases and even be able to change your genetics epigenetically using gene insertion technologies or epigenetic reprogramming or chromosomes, etc. This is coming, isn't it? And it's going to require people like you to actually take those ideas and turn them into things. Now, the technologies I think that are going to transform the future are, number one, biotechnologies, artificial intelligence, and materials technology like 3D printing of parts or micro-layered technologies like creating metals and other material that is micro-layered that can't be produced by conventional technologies, but by the new, we call 3D printing or other technologies, is going to allow us to build things that otherwise physically, structurally, we could never build before, right? And that's where I see your technology of converting ideas into assets is going to give countries that are naturally more creative, like America, the prescient control of the world. Artificial intelligence, biotechnology, and manufacturing is completely going to change, isn't it? But it's going to be people like you and your firm, strategicpatentlaw.com, that's going to change that. Because without the protection that is given to the idea generators, and without that upward growth into small, medium, and large companies, that intellectual property is not going to become an asset and a growth point for a nation, is it?
That's true. I want to talk a little bit about what's patentable, because you're talking about a lot of sophisticated R&D aspects of inventive creativity, but
right,
many people are exposed because technology has infiltrated daily life. There are so many new possibilities just for people in their own day-to-day activities, and they might
right,
see new ways to do things better. It could be very simple. It could be complicated. It doesn't matter. As long as you understand how to solve the problem and it offers a benefit, I can turn that into an asset. I can turn that into a patentable idea, as long as I know that there's a benefit and that no one else has done it before. That's my specialty. So
right,
what I do is I teach the invention. I teach how to make and use it in very clear terms. I started my career as a teacher, essentially, in graduate school. I taught physics. So I taught basic calculus and math to college kids. And so I know how to express things very clearly and completely to teach the invention such that it would support the claims that define what's invented and define what infringement would mean, so that anyone could read those claims and know whether they're infringing or not. And that clarity is what's needed to make the patent valuable.
Absolutely. Stay right there, Russ. We will have you back in just a minute for another segment.
Okay.
Weinzimmer of strategicpatentlaw.com, 800-621-3654. Russ, I'd like you to continue. And I'm trying to be, you know, I don't want to go all over the place and waste either time or money or whatever. But what you do is different. Instead of getting a broad patent that goes all over the place trying to pretend you've staked your claim on something, you want to focus it down to what's going to be a marketable product, and the patent is then bulletproof, so it protects you from a lot of legal challenges and makes it a lot less expensive, too. But then you're able to actually move from a patent idea into product to asset, which means it becomes something that can be grown into a business, which is really important because a lot of people out there, the way for them, and this is what I've learned, if I was going to say one principle in business I've learned to tell my three sons is, you need to get your kind of background academics in your 20s. By the time you're in your 30s, you should be working in a corporation or business to kind of learn your business smarts. And by the time you're 40, you need to be independent and running your own business. And that's all based on ideas, whether or not it's a marketing idea for a restaurant or a food cart or your own business. You need to be not under somebody else's thumb and actually running your own business, which is based on ideas. A business is basically an idea that's a generator of income and service and something that can be ongoing for a period of years. So in your fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh decade, and I believe that if you have a business that's interesting and fun and not toxic, I don't believe in retirement. Retirement to me is the back of the shovel on the plot of ground if you happen to die accidentally or from some unexpected illness that hits you. But to be honest with you, I don't believe in retirement. Retirement to me is stupid. Retirement is for people that work in a toxic industry or something that's very mundane that after 20 or 30 years of service, they want to get the heck away from it because it's probably killing them or boring them to death. Where if you're in something really interesting, fun, or a great service like I help people with their health problems and learn and teach and do research, I don't ever want to stop this. If I'm 100, I'm going to still be doing this and even expanding what I can do in terms of new technology and new abilities. So what do you think? You know, how do you can take someone's idea and move it into an asset? Please continue.
Sure. In addition to the business orientation that I have in writing the patent application, I also have a business specialist with an MBA. He's a certified patent valuation specialist. He's a published business author. His name is Joe Carlin, and he's been working with me for about 10 years, helping my clients do business analyses of the market and then how to approach that market for their invention. And the effect has been really positive on the clients that we've worked with. The testimonials are all on the website for that service as well as for clients that have worked with me. So I invite people to go to the testimonial page on my website, strategicpatentlaw.com, and see how others have commented on how well we do.
Right. Yeah, in other words, you've got testimonials that say, look, we did a great job. They turned this into an asset. They actually expanded their business or they became a business. And again, this is what America does. I mean, if you look back over the last 18 years, America has invented, in a sense, the modern world, hasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, from the light bulbs to AC to power distribution to space travel. To airplanes, to televisions. I mean, everything has been invented primarily by Americans and to some extent Canadians and Brits, but mainly 90% of the patents in the world are actually American-generated, aren't they?
That's true. The Constitution has had the basis for the patent system in it since it was written. So it's always been the case that this country promoted innovation and protection of innovation so that investments made could be turned into a return rather than having them stolen from us. And right. Any country or individual that is in the business of stealing is undermining the health really of the whole world because they're not contributing to the process. They're subtracting from it.
Well, you see, that's why, for example, when you look at countries like China, if I look at their business model, they suppress innovation. I talked to some business people a few years ago, where they go and they bought a U.S. company, bought out to kind of a joint work with a Chinese engineering company, and the engineers, they were told, hey, go down your own bench and make something, and then develop or invent something, process, whatever, They went back in 6 months and they didn't invent it because they were afraid that if they did something that was reported to the people, Republican Army, they'd end up in a Laodai prison camp and get tissue tape for their organs. So, I mean, people say, oh, no, listen, I got relatives in China, okay? My sister is married to a Chinese gentleman. Very smart people, no difficulty, but their inventive, if you want to call it, curiosity index is virtually zero, which is why in order for them to be able to become a prescient power, whether it's artificial intelligence or programming or materials technology, they have to steal it from us. They don't have the mechanisms or even the culture to actually generate it. And you even see that in Europe. You don't see the same kind of inventive spirit in Europe, do you?
Yeah. Inventions are new combinations, and claims record those combinations. Every claim is a set of elements that have never been seen before that provide a benefit.
Right.
So that's one thing I do, is I want to understand when I talk to an inventor, what are the benefits, what are the elements that you're bringing together now to provide that benefit, and is that benefit, is that new combination new? So we do a search. We do a search to see if that combination of elements has ever been seen before. So I believe going through this process for as long as I have, inventiveness can be taught. You could just start elaborating on new combinations of things and seeing, does this get me anywhere? Is this going to solve the problem? Will this make it better? How can I make it even better? Can I add something new? Can I change something? Can I substitute? And this stimulates all sorts of spin-offs. So sometimes when an inventor comes to me with one innovation, we find that there's really more to it than what they originally thought.
Yeah, in fact, in other words, you're good at what's called the process of arriving at new questions, I guess is what I would say. Because when you start to understand anything, it's not the answers you seek, it's the best questions to explain the paradox or the things that you're observing. For example, look at Harvey 500 years ago, when you look at Harvey's heart, when you realize he thought the heart was pumping the blood around the body, so he said, oh, there's a circulatory system, so the blood's returning. Now, since Sir Harvey did that, we've made a number of developments from non-Newtonian fluid dynamics. We discover the heart pumps one-third to one-quarter of the blood away from the heart, but it's the secondary peristaltic wave of circulation that pushes to the periphery, and all the blood flow back to the heart is not by the heart itself. It doesn't have a giant straw. It's the peristaltic wave of your venules, veins, and our inferior and superior vena cava. The same thing as thought. What is thought? For example, DARPA and the Pentagon are spending a fortune trying to see if they can actually convert thoughts using non-liquid nitrogen magnetronic helmets so they can have a battlefield helmet so a soldier can fire off an ordnance by thought rather than having to make a verbal command, including even the weapon systems that may be remote or even able to target, say, the enemy. That system, they're making a priori assumptions about what thought is, which is incorrect, and that's the reason why most of what I could say paradigms within the medical system are incorrect. I have roughly 400 healthcare protocols, and almost every one of my paradigms and protocols, which can be proven by science, differs dramatically from the so-called standard medical approach toward almost any problem. And the reason is because the way my mind parses down problems, I can literally look at things differently. I look at them like you, like a patent officer, a patent attorney, by kind of parsing it down to its guts and then saying, okay, if you make these questions to explain this paradox in front of you, how does it change the utility of what you're trying to do? Whether you're trying to cook something better with a better type of stove, or you're trying to create a new way of creating material to build a better, truck or car or whatever, like we went from unibody to other technology. So what you do is you're able to parse down and say, hey, you got an extra benefit you didn't even realize here. That's why you move it from patentable idea into patented asset. And that's how you provide a lot of extra services rather than just patenting, a broad area of knowledge. Stay right there, Russ. We'll be right back with more from Russ Weinzimmer, patent attorney.
You have been.
welcome back, and one of my most amazing co-host guests I've ever had. I'm Scott Adams. Here he is, the CEO and tech master of Red State Talk Radio, and of course he's allowed us to rebroadcast our shows late night from 10 to 12 from Monday to Friday, right through the weekend for the NutriMedical Report. And Scott is a geopolitical, I would call him ninja master. He knows these connections so much in his head, it's like if I put a big map board of all the different connections and the information flowing in, even in the last few days, he's got so much information to convey about all the crazy things going on, and, you know, the Russiagate, Helsinki, Bill Broder, and everything else. I want to get him on early here to start it, because we're going to do the next whole hour with Scott, kind of making all these connections, because this is a time of a change of history. This is going to change everything. The deep state has been caught. The beast has been penned against the wall. And the dragon slayer is here, Scott, to slay the dragon of the deep state with all this info. So let's get started, Scott.
All right. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, and we've got lots of information. By the way, I'll have this up here. I'll try to get it up this afternoon, so we'll get it not only over to you at Red State. It goes up to Revolution Radio and on Deagle Network. This is vital information. I want to convert it to a video as well, because I think people should start understanding that this information is going to change the nature not only of American history, but the world. Because if we don't solve these problems here in America, some of the problems vexing the world are not going to get solved. We're going to have some nasty consequences down the road. So let's get started with the multiple bombs you have to drop, from info bombs, I guess you're going to drop on the table today. Go ahead.
Wow. Okay. Well, where do you want to start?
Well, start off with Broder and Hillary Clinton and the foundation, and the fact that Broder was a Brit who was dropped his citizenship. Okay. I think he had some citizenship in America, but he made $1.5 billion, didn't pay tax, and $400 million of it went off to the Clintons. That's a good start. And then we have other things like Putin's comment about lots of other, so many things. Just roll.
Yeah. Okay. And well, thank you. And you know, the thing is that a lot of people get lost in all the confusion. You know, there's a lot of names. There's a lot of players. There's a lot of things that are a lot of moving parts. I mean, we can get into so many sub categories of the major picture.
Right.
But, you know, Carter Page about 2 weeks ago made it clear on Tucker Carlson's show that he was going to he expected a big reveal from Helsinki. And I had been saying that was going to happen. And sure enough, it did in the form of Bill Browder. It also came in the form of a soccer ball. And that soccer ball that Putin gave to Donald Trump has a chip in it called an NFC chip. And it's a data chip that communicates with phones. And it's well documented. You can buy this ball on the market. It's a $165 soccer ball. And I think it was either a coded message, or, in fact, there is a special modified chip, perhaps, in the ball that can do what it needs to do in terms of decoding 160 terabytes. I have a source that told me that 160 terabytes of data was transferred to the Trump team by Vladimir Putin. See,
so in other words, this is a decryption code in the ball is what you're saying. And 160 terabytes of data is there.
Yeah,
The chip
can decode audio, text, and phone calls that are encrypted.
Right.
And they broke the code on it. And from what I understand, that a lot of this information related to Uranium-1, related to a lot of the oligarchs. See, there was a long time when Browder and Putin, they're enemies now. But there was a time when Browder was friends with Putin. And then Putin aligned himself with certain other oligarchs. And, you know, and here we are. But a lot of people want to know, you know, how this whole thing lays out. And it's pretty simple. And how it works is that we remember Seth Rich. He was murdered in D.C. And we now know through a source that came on a phone call through a guy named Jason Goodman. And he was on a phone call, and he said that he knows the two guys that actually murdered. They're FBI and ATF, and they're hitmen.
Right.
And they were late, 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 and they finally got their hit But this wasn't even a big deal for them. They do other kinds of hits, too. But what happened was Seth Rich, and he does exist, and it is Seth Rich because I have a video of Seth Rich being introduced as Seth Rich asking a question at an election integrity forum. So we know that Seth Rich existed, and it wasn't just a fake name.
Right.
All right, so you got Seth Rich basically leaking the data. Why do we know it's a leak and not a hack? Because of the data transfer rates. Because the data right now is sitting over at WikiLeaks. That data was dumped onto the server by a flash drive, not a internet wire transfer.
Right.
The timing of that data, there's information that explains how that data got there. And so it's the way the file was created onto the hard drive, and it was so fast that it had to have been with a flash drive. Okay, so we know that...
Yeah, because you're a tech expert, and what you're saying, this data was from what? Was the source was the Russian hack, but it just somehow arrived at WikiLeaks? How did that happen?
Keep in mind, the Seth Rich died before the DNC convention, about a month or two. I forget the exact date, but...
Right.
The timing works out perfectly. So what happened was John Podesta starts to understand that there was a leak, a breach, and he knew that this was going to be big trouble. So they went into spin control, and they went to Plan B. And Plan B was the Russians did it. We're going to blame the Russians and pin it on our opponent.
Right.
So they dusted off John Brennan. They asked him for some help. And John Brennan, along with... along with our Russian ambassador and Christopher right. Steele, put together the dossier. They also worked with Hannigan, GCHQ, the Five Eyes. They
right.
incorporated Alexander Downer, and they incorporated him to meet up with Papadopoulos, and they also tried to set up Carter Page. These were basically components to
now,
try
to build a... Let me ask a quick question. I heard something, I don't know if this fits into it, that Seth Rich was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and he was really ticked off at what happened inside the DNC. And so he actually grabbed this data, and that's the sort of the genesis behind this, and they decided that once the leaks were out to WikiLeaks, this is really going to put the DNC in trouble, because Podesta made a lot of money from Russia, and so did Hillary Clinton and the foundation with Uranium One. And this is their plan to actually re-divert it to say, hey, let's turn this back into make sure that Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation doesn't get in trouble, and the DNC gets in trouble, including Podesta, who was doing a lot of crimes, because the internal problem in the DNC, and the DNC hasn't got the problem fixed yet either. And now they're trying to see if they can squash Ocasio-Cortez, but I heard that the Seth Rich thing started around Bernie, and there's a lot of people within the Democratic Party and independents very ticked off about what happened to Bernie Sanders, because if Hillary hadn't interfered, Bernie would have been the candidate. And he could have given Trump quite a run for the money, couldn't he?
Yeah, he was a populist, and he would have played well for the Democrat Party. He would have been a disaster for the country. I don't know if he...
Right, he would have been a disaster because communists like him always fail. Even if he's a doctor, he had a bizarre idea about how social communism is actually going to create money out of nothing in order to supply all these freebies for everybody like Ocasio-Cortez. But does that make any sense that there was any connection with Bernie and Seth Rich? Because I have a feeling that they had to dream up the Russia connection.
Here's how this all happened. There's no doubt that the reason why he leaked was because he was fed up with what he was seeing.
Right.
He leaked. John Podesta found out who the leaker was.
Right.
He went into spin control. They actually put a hit on Seth Rich. He was murdered.
Right.
Dead as disco.
Right.
Then John Podesta then says, we got to spin this because we got to make this look like we're a victim. The Democrats always want to be the victim.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Got John Brennan. They got the Russian ambassador. His name is McFaul. Are we up against the break?
We're up against the break, but we're going to come back in 8 minutes, 2 minutes to the hour and 6 minutes after. And then we're going to have a full hour, four 10-minute segments. So we're going to put all this together. Actually, I want to assemble all these five segments together and put it up as a video as well, which I'll do. And we'll put up a series of rotating pictures. I'll do the techie stuff to get it up. because I think that's this important information, because you connect more dots than anybody I know, and you're a super genius at this. You're not just like average techie. You're way out there, Scott. So I hope to absorb it, ask you lots of questions, and see if I can connect all the Velcro in my mind of how all these people are connected. But people need to get this, because this is going to change not only American history, but the world, isn't it?
It will. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Need a powerful ally to fight daily bugs and serious pathogens? Allicin Med is the powerful universal pathogen killer's latest advance of German-sourced allicin, enzymatically stabilized to clear the body of bacteria, fungi, mycobacteria, and parasites. It penetrates body biofilms and is non-toxic to tissues. Pathogen resistance cannot develop for long-term body-optimized wellness. Clear stealth pathogens that promote autoimmune disease, cancer, and vascular inflammation and plaque, and promote healing of tissues. Now pathogen-free. With 200 milligrams more power than prior Alamed, you can't get a more powerful ally to fight daily bugs and serious pathogens. Give your body what it needs. Allicin Med. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutridyne at 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. That's 1-888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. And listen to the NutriMedical Report on the Genesis Radio Network with open lines every weekday. NutriMedical.com, bringing nutrition and medicine together.